This is Barbara Leslie, President of the Oakland Port Commission. Oakland International Airport, OAK, is proud to bring you this podcast of KQED's Forum. When you're choosing your next adventure, the smart and convenient choice is to fly the East Bay Way from OAK to destinations across the USA and Mexico. And when you return home, tune in to KQED, always bringing us remarkable stories about who we are and where we live. Enjoy today's episode of Forum.
Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
From KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim. Coming up on Forum, two FEMA-led mass vaccination sites are now up and running in California, one at the Oakland Coliseum, the other at Cal State LA, in hopes of reaching communities hard hit by the pandemic. Latinx communities have borne the brunt of COVID-19's devastation, but initial numbers suggest they make up a small share of the states inoculated. While a big hurdle to vaccine access now is supply, critics also point to how and where they're distributed, the challenges Latinos face accessing vaccines, and the status of the state's rollout after this news. This is Forum. I'm Mina Kim. More than 50 leaders in California signed on to a letter last week urging Governor Gavin Newsom to improve and expand vaccine access to Latinx communities, stressing that they've been dramatically overrepresented in the state's COVID-19 cases and deaths and are key to the state's economy. Latino workers represent 37% of the state's labor force, they wrote, including an outsized share of essential workers. And to ensure California's workforce is not eviscerated during their most productive years, the administration must recalibrate vaccine distribution policies. Joining me now is Sonia Diaz, founding director of Latino Policy and Politics Initiative at the Luskin School of Public Affairs at the University of California, Los Angeles. Sonia Diaz, thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning, and thanks for having me.
Why did you write this letter? What are your biggest concerns about the vaccine rollout's effect on Latino communities?
Well, Los Angeles and California have had an outsized share of COVID-19 infections and mortality, and this has fallen on the shoulders of Latino households for one reason in particular. They're working to keep Americans safe. And when we think about frontline communities and those most at need right now of access to a vaccine, it's those workers. And they're frankly not getting what they need because of systematic failures and policymaking that unfortunately doesn't take into account demographics and geography.
So then what are the key things you're asking state administrators to do to recalibrate its vaccine distribution?
They're pretty simple. And in fact, Governor Gavin Newsom and his administration already heeded our ask and put into implementation one of them, which is start collecting racial and ethnic data about who's getting the vaccine and where they're getting it. The other things are a little more novel, and they require attention to details. When we think about the elderly Californians who are at risk, we know that they're vulnerable. But data has also made clear that it's young Latinos and young people of color who are dying disproportionately. In Los Angeles County alone, between November and the present, the death rate of Latinos to COVID-19 has increased by 1,000%. And so this means that any access to vaccine around age also needs to be including workers who are not over the age of 65.
So you would like to see basically that frontline communities that are under the age of 65 are included in the priority group.
Absolutely, because they're dying. And this is not a Latino issue. This is an issue of California's solvency, ability to recover, and frankly, American rebuilding. And the reason being is that the people that are dying, the workers that are dying in the most productive years. These are the people that are going to continue to ensure that California is the fifth largest economy in the world, but they're also the people who lag behind other Californians with access to care, both in terms of insurance coverage and actually a doctor that can speak their language or practices in their community. And that gets me to the other point, which is that we need to improve the resiliency of these communities. And we have to do that by investing in county public health agencies and our community health centers that are the trusted messengers for these vulnerable Californians.
In terms of changes with regard to how the state prioritizes who should be getting vaccines, you're saying that you would like a change in the guidance, but it also sounds like you have a lot of concerns with how the rollout is being handled. That even, let's say, that the guidance said specifically you should prioritize getting Latinos under the age of 65 vaccinated, like, period, that how it's been handled has also been a problem, that even under the existing guidance, more Latinos should be getting vaccinated.
Absolutely. And this is a problem that really stemmed from an absence of leadership in the White House under Donald Trump and led to decentralization amongst our state and local governments. But that said, our leaders in California have been trying, with limited success, in getting vaccines to frontline communities. One example that I think that the rest of the state should really start replicating is having a Riverside County program where you're vaccinating farm workers at their job site. That can include in food processing and meatpacking plants. That also should include employers and public health agencies. And here's another thing, just stepping back, because I know a lot of the listeners who are elderly or have elderly family members have already had trouble trying to get a vaccine appointment online. And so there needs to be a technological component and one that does not require use of high-speed broadband internet and English-only language capacity. We need to ensure that Californians can show up and get a vaccine and not jump through hurdles to try and get their family members signed up through a system that unfortunately is not user-friendly.
And again, Sonia Diaz is founding director of the Latino Policy and Politics Initiative at UCLA. I'd like to invite Barbara Fader-Ostrov into the conversation, contributing writer reporting on medicine and health policy at Cal Matters. Barbara Fader-Ostrov, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So remind us what the biggest problems with the vaccine rollout have been, both the problems that the state has created and the problems that they're facing now that they can't control.
Sure. So, I mean, the biggest problem is the lack of supply. That said, there were still problems with the rollout, and most people characterized it as pretty chaotic. The state still has administered more than 6 million doses, and I was reading today that that is more than some countries at this point. It is a Herculean task. It was, as Sonia said, complicated by a lack of coordination from the federal government. Things are improving, but the state still has a lot of equity issues to deal with. You know, we're hearing a lot from the governor on how equity is our North Star, and yes, he was actually at a vaccination clinic at a fruit packing plant in Coachella today. It's part of his tour of various vaccine sites. We've seen reports of people driving in from wealthier, whiter communities to grab scarce vaccine slots in lower income communities of color. And the system, as it stands right now, favors people with time, access to technology, and reliable transportation. We've seen that state and local leaders are really trying to level the playing field. They have earmarked a lot of money for 150 community organizations serving disadvantaged people and hard to reach communities like farm workers who may speak indigenous languages. The state's registration site, MyTurn, is being translated into Spanish and four other languages. And there's a hotline that will have Spanish speaking operators. So some efforts are definitely being made.
Well, it's good to hear that they are turning the corner. And Sonia Diaz was suggesting that the state is listening at least to their concerns around data collection. Can you just remind us first who is eligible right now for a vaccine?
Sure. Any healthcare worker, anyone over the age of 65 and older, and then three groups of essential workers: teachers and childcare workers, people who work in the food industry, including grocery store workers, people who work in food processing plants and food work, farm workers, and then first responders like police and firefighters.
And how complicated would it be to include more frontline workers under the age of 65, as Sonia Diaz would like to see, given the fact that we are seeing that the state is constantly making adjustments? For example, their priorities change to basically re-include people with disabilities and compromised immune systems. Can you talk about that? And how complicated is it really to try to make these kinds of revisions to its rollout plan?
So yeah, the state has shown some flexibility, and people with certain disabilities or medical conditions will be able to will be eligible for vaccines starting on March 15th. But one of the issues is we still have very short supply overall, and we have about 17 million people who are going to be eligible for vaccines starting on March 15th. That's a lot of people. And then there's the complexity of trying to prove that you work in the occupation you say you do. And I think what the state is trying to do instead is divert vaccine allocations to disadvantaged communities. So for example, on my turn, the state's online registration site, that's going to have some vaccine allocations attached to it. And they're going to be reserving some of those appointments specifically for zip codes or communities that are disadvantaged, low income, may have large concentrations of Black and brown people.
Sonia Diaz, do you think that will be enough? What more do you think is needed besides also making sure that you're zeroing in on zip codes, hard hit zip codes?
Well, one of the most important things is whether or not Californians can survive COVID-19 and then thrive. We're talking right now about disproportionate infections and mortality rates, and we also need to be talking about morbidity and the lasting impacts of this on our households, but also our economic future. And if we want to dive in, that means that we need to make investments to thrive. That means increasing the capacity of our local public health agencies and community health centers and civil society organizations to get to these hard-to-reach communities, vulnerable communities, limited English proficient communities in real time, because although we all hope to overcome COVID-19, we know California will continue to have wildfires. We don't know what the next crisis or pandemic is, but we need to beef up our infrastructure now. One of the most important examples I've been saying time and time again, in a state with rampant wildfires over the course of the last 4 years, we've expected our campesinos to go and pick fruits without N95 masks. California should have had a stockpile for the very reason of our climate change disasters. And yet we find ourselves at COVID-19, where we're asking those farm workers to go pick pomegranates, go pick nuts without masks during a time of COVID-19, and also a time, unfortunately, of climate disasters.
Well, we will be digging into more of your recommendations, in particular the one where you're talking about how we need to get vaccines to public health, to smaller local health agencies and community health centers. After the break, we'll actually be speaking with the chief operating officer of a community health center network. And so we look forward to that. But I also want to invite our listeners right now to join the conversation with your questions about the vaccine rollout, what your experience has been trying to get a vaccine for you or a loved one, and what your thoughts are on the disparities that you're seeing, particularly how they're impacting the Latino community. 866-733-6786 is the number to call. The email address, forum@kqed.org, on Twitter or Facebook at KQED Forum. I'm Mina Kim.
This is Barbara Leslie, president of the Oakland Port Commission. Oakland International Airport, OAK, is proud to bring you this podcast of KQED's Forum. When you're choosing your next adventure, the smart and convenient choice is to fly the East Bay Way from OAK to destinations across the USA and Mexico. And when you return home, tune in to KQED, always bringing us remarkable stories about who we are and where we live. Enjoy today's episode of Forum.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. We're talking about the challenges Latinos and other vulnerable Californians face in accessing vaccines and the status of the state's vaccine rollout with Sonia Diaz, founding director of the Latino Policy and Politics Initiative at the Luskin School of Public Affairs at the University of California, Los Angeles, Barbara Fader Ostrov, a contributing writer reporting on medicine and health policy for Cal Matters. And joining me now is Dr. Efrain Talamantes, Chief Operating Officer at AltaMed Health Services, a network of community health clinics in Los Angeles and Orange County. Dr. Talamantes, thanks so much for talking with us.
Thank you for the opportunity.
One of the recommendations in Sonia Diaz's letter is fully integrating community health centers into the vaccine distribution process. Why has this been so difficult, since I understand you are set up to vaccinate people?
Yeah, I would say, you know, as a primary care physician and more importantly as a Californian, you know, going into 2020, I was incredibly proud of our state and really the talk of really ensuring that every Californian had access to healthcare. And obviously that got we got sidelined by this pandemic. And going into this pandemic, serving an underserved community like the one we serve at AltaMed here in Southern California, both LA and Orange County, over 300,000 patients, that the majority of them live in the top quartiles of the Center for Disease Control Social Vulnerability Index, meaning that they're some of the most vulnerable Californians in the state. And as some of the other discussants have shared, many reasons for that. But this pandemic has really shown that our healthcare infrastructure is fractured. We haven't really learned our lessons. Today, we have so much data that we can look at to really quantify what equity is really about. And what's been very disheartening to me and to the providers that we serve here, the patients we serve here at AltaMed, is that we keep telling people that help is coming and far from it. Every time that we go up and we're in line, whether it was for personal protective equipment, for COVID-19 testing, and now vaccines, somehow we end up at the back of the line. And you know, it is, as a chief operating officer, obviously navigating this crisis, it's not only shame on all of us here in California, but how is it that we can live to this ideal of equity if constantly we're not holding ourselves and our decision makers accountable to making sure we're using a data-driven approach? And we've been preparing as a community health center, we've been preparing for this vaccine rollout since we heard about it, probably in you know, sometime in the summer, only to be told that there's no certainty about how many vaccines we're going to get. There's limitations on who can get the vaccine and where, and we can't move it around. And in addition to that, just having the technological challenges, all the integration we're being asked with very little investment. And I do think that is part of the story here, is that we're obviously this pandemic is an accumulation of so many social injustices that have been done or that these communities have experienced. And now it's really our turn to really live up to the ideal of equity and make sure this vaccine rollout improves and improves rapidly. I think many of our patients are tired of waiting and they're being asked to go back to work. And so we see all these conflicts and we're trying to reconcile them, but we do need help.
Yes. So when you say lack of investment, the vaccine is free, but for you to distribute them and to make sure that you're vaccinating people, that's a cost to you. Are you saying that community health centers aren't getting the resources they need to do that part of it?
Yeah. The resources, the certainty around how many vaccines we get, the resources have not been clear. In addition, when we speak of equity, it's really about going to where our patients are. And there's plenty of studies showing place-based approaches. I mean, the vaccine should not, whether you get the vaccine or not, should not be determined by where you live, your zip code, or what occupation you have, or how much money you make. And I do think that that is what's happening, is that we're not getting enough support. And then we're asked to commit. Now we're being asked to commit to high volumes of vaccines. And we have a short amount of time to distribute them, administer them. And equity, it doesn't work like that. We got to meet our community where they are, and we got to invest and make sure we get those vaccines out there. And it's going to take more. And as a California, as a, one of the, you know, the fifth largest economy in the world, it would be a shame for us not to invest in making sure we get these vaccines out and stop the deaths, the senseless deaths that we're seeing caused by this pandemic.
Because what's wrong with, right now the state has prioritized hospitals and mass vaccination sites. What role do community clinics play that they don't?
Well, we're located in some of the most underserved communities. I'll tell you, my patients walk here. They some of them actually use walkers to get here. And so part of it is, how do we get them to these mass vaccine sites? We're doing what we can. We're trying to partner with folks to get them transportation. But many of them also share that they want to come to our site that they trust because of their doctor or nurses. And also they want to make sure that if they have a reaction, they have somewhere to go, that they go somewhere where they receive the vaccine. Those are the stories that we are hearing. We also hear a lot about patients, our patients who have responsibilities, not only work, but maybe they are caretakers at home for somebody. And so they have to arrange a whole array of different supports in order to just get out of the home to get a vaccine. And so if it's further away, it adds more challenge.
And also that trusted relationship with the doctor, that also helps at getting at any instances of vaccine hesitancy, I imagine.
Yeah, definitely. You know, what we see quite a bit in our patient population, many of them, not only have a multitude of chronic conditions, and we're again seeing that the state is moving faster, announcing that, you know, by March 15th, we'll have the opportunity to start really vaccinating not only our vulnerable patients, but also those with a multitude of chronic conditions that we serve. But they haven't shown as much hesitancy. I think that they think we're hesitant. They look at us and they keep saying, I just got off the phone actually with a patient right now who basically said, when can I come in for my vaccine? I've been waiting since the beginning of the year. And we continue to tell people that they have to wait their turn. But we're also hearing about another family member who just got COVID, ended up in the hospital in the ICU and passed away. And so we're trying to do our best to prevent that from happening, knowing that there is a way to do that through this vaccine.
Well, we have listeners who are writing in. And again, you can email your comments at forum at kqed.org, post them online at Twitter or Facebook at KQED Forum, or call us 866-733-6786. Jorge writes, the low percentage of Hispanics in California already vaccinated is based on simple demographics. I took my 97-year-old mother for her vaccination. The age has just been dropped to 65 and above. At 68 years old, I'm the only one in my family that qualifies. My wife is under 65 years old, and our four adult children are all under 35 years old. The vast majority of Hispanics are below 65 years old, so they are not eligible. It really is a young population, isn't it, Sonia Diaz?
Yeah, and you know, that's precisely right. This is where data matters. And data about populations, especially the plurality population in the state of California, is critical. So Latinos' median age in the United States is 30. For Black Americans, it's age 34. For Asian Americans, age 37. For White Americans, it's 58. When we see who is dying of COVID-19, it is not our white Californians for a variety of reasons. Access to a healthcare provider, ability to stay home, shelter in place, physically distant. And so if we want to end the unnecessary loss of life of Californians, we simply need to vaccinate our workers, and we need to do that now. And they're young.
Let me go to caller Dorothea in Berkeley. Hi, Dorothea.
Hi, good morning. So my suggestion is that the state equip fans and have portable vaccination sites. They go to the workers. They don't have to prove they're working in the fields or anything. They just go right there where they're working, or to Safeway or wherever it is, and vaccinate people. So I was wondering how the state could invest in these vans that are equipped with the equipment that they need to keep the vaccine safe. And just go to the people rather than making them come to you.
Dorothea, thanks. Barbara Fader-Ostrov, I know that there has been some mobile vaccination units. Is that what Dorothea is talking about? Is the state investing in that kind of thing?
I think they are in terms of giving money to community-based organizations and eventually some clinics to do that type of work. So what I'm seeing is that there are those efforts emerging, but they tend to be at the local level where people know how it would work on the ground rather than something imposed at the state level.
Let me go to Mary in Sacramento. Hi, Mary.
Hello. Yes, I called perhaps the gentleman from that represents the clinics in the Los Angeles area could respond. I did hear on NPR, and I hope that I understood it correctly, that the Biden administration is going to be sending additional doses of vaccine directly to federally qualified health centers, which would be, I believe, the same as community clinics. And this is to be above and beyond the allocations that the states get. And if so, that should help the lower income neighborhoods that those clinics serve. And I'm wondering if what I heard, if I heard it accurately, and if the gentleman from the clinics in L.A. would care to respond.
Mary, thanks. Dr. Efrain Talamantes, does that sound right?
Mary, that's correct. We were very pleased to hear last week that the Biden-Harris administration will be directly getting vaccines to us. We did hear from the Human Resource Service Administration, HRSA, that we'll be getting vaccines. And that is a temporary way for us to get vaccines. I think we continue to share this message that community health centers are really the backbone across the country. I mean, we serve not only rural but also underserved communities. We're in some of the toughest places in terms of making sure that we can get access to care to people that not only are uninsured, but may be underinsured or even undocumented. And so this administration has not only been responsive, and it also speaks to, you know, again, yeah, this is a Herculean task of getting these vaccines out and supply issue. The prior administration left community health centers out consistently. And so we're really pleased to have the Biden-Harris administration support community health centers. We take care of millions of people here in California. And again, we've built trust. I mean, Ultimed, we've been here for 50 years. People come to us with a variety of different challenges, not just medical, social. And we are always looking to make sure that we live our mission of eliminating those disparities that all of us in California worry about. And we know that these are the same individuals that oftentimes, again, are serving us in grocery stores or our caretakers. And so their health is as important because we come in contact with them. So that is, again, a huge investment from this administration that we welcome.
The new vaccine, mass vaccination site from the Biden administration that's now up and running at Cal State LA, though it is a mass vaccination site, do you think it will be more successful in terms of reaching hard-hit Latino populations?
Can I interject?
Yes.
And Dr. Talamantes would love to hear your hot take. I grew up very close to Cal State LA. It's in Northeast Los Angeles. This is an area that has been hard hit, akin to Southeast Los Angeles and other parts of the state like the Fruitvale and the Oakland. Ultimately, siting a vaccination site in a frontline community is a start, but you need to ensure that they have access to vaccine appointments. And if that access point is all digital, communities of color, low-income communities, digitally underserved communities are going to be left out. Because access to a vaccine on an online portal not only requires a lot of infrastructure, but it requires access to asymmetrical information. And so long as we start thinking about COVID as a war and starting to take care of our healthcare workforce so that we can ensure our communities have access to providers and have the trusted messengers that are assisting these members of our communities to obtain an appointment, that's how we're going to overcome this war.
Dr. Talamantes, I don't know if you have anything to add.
Yeah, there. Certainly. It's everything is important in this war in terms of both centralized efforts and mass vaccination sites. They serve a purpose. But the fact that, again, early on, we weren't included in a decentralized effort. And again, we, you know, using data to really look at, you know, these communities. I mean, when we were testing patients at UltraMed, our peak positivity rate was 40%. And again, we're still compiling our data on the number of COVID deaths we've had at UltraMed. But we can tell you that our doctors were constantly on the phone with emergency responders trying to ensure that those patients had access to hospitals. And we can't let our guard down. Both the mass sites serve a purpose, but also decentralized sites. And a better partnership for us to work together to make sure that all these vaccines are used, that it gets to the hard hit areas. And we're also in California. I think there's a lot of innovation that has proven very successful. I mean, many of us, again, have the ability to get services into our home that previously maybe we weren't used to. But because of this pandemic, it's become a necessity. But we can't forget about those communities who don't have access to broadband. The digital divide is real. We see it in the care we provide. We've tried offering video. We struggled through it. It's very challenging for us to do video care. The majority of our appointments end up being telephone care. But we still see improvements in people's health. And that's part of our commitment to making sure that not only are there mass vaccine sites, but that some of the smaller providers in the communities also have access and can provide vaccines.
Well, Sandy writes, I'm over 50 with asthma and a school employee, yet I can't get a vaccine appointment anywhere in the Bay Area. My turn allows me to register multiple times. There seems to be no cross-check. The public is demanding schools to reopen, and we want to go back to work, but not without a vaccine. It's beyond frustrating. Barbara Federostrov, you were talking about how the online system privileges people with time, people who have technology and reliable transportation if they want to be able to get a vaccine once they've been able to sign up for it online. Can you just talk very quickly about how the state is addressing that, thinking about that, and even just dealing with some of the glitches in the system?
Yeah, it's been pretty messy. It's also a really big job. So the state, rather late in the game, did put up a statewide vaccine registration system. It's called MyTurn. It's myturn.ca.gov. And it is supposed to kind of unify a lot of the local registration systems, again, all online with, you know, a hotline here or there, to let people know both when it's their turn. So I registered to be notified when it's my turn specifically, as a person under 65. It then went to, it then is supposed to bring in online all the county registration systems. Right now it's working for, I think, San Diego, Los Angeles, and perhaps Alameda counties. It's still a work in progress, and it has been kind of glitchy, but it's evolving. It will get better. I think more of the point that I want to pick up is that once age was thrown into the mix earlier than expected, that really put a burden on all of the online registration systems.
Well, we'll have more with Barbara Feder-Ostroff, Efrain Talamantes, and Sonia Diaz after the break. Stay with us. You're listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim.
Support for Forum is sponsored by Stanford's Master of Liberal Arts program. Have you found yourself reflecting on your life and education? Perhaps you think it's too late or you're too busy to earn a master's degree. Stanford's part-time MLA program is designed for anyone, from recent college grads to retirees who'd like to pursue an interdisciplinary course of study in the liberal arts. MLA students also enjoy access to the world-class facilities on the Stanford campus. Information session held May 16th. Learn more at mla.stanford.edu.
You're listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. We're talking about the challenges Latinos and other vulnerable Californians face in accessing vaccines and the status of the state's vaccine rollout with Barbara Feder-Ostrov, contributing writer at Cal Matters. She reports on medicine and health policy. Dr. Efrain Talamantes, Chief Operating Officer for Ultimate Health Services, a network of community health clinics in Los Angeles and Orange Counties, and Sonia Diaz, Founding Director of Latino Policy and Politics Initiative at UCLA. And you, our listeners, are with us. What are your questions about the vaccine rollout? What's been your experience trying to get a vaccine for you or your loved one? What are your thoughts on the disparities that are impacting the Latino community? Call us 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. Get in touch on Twitter or Facebook at KQED Forum. Email your questions or comments to forum@kqed.org. John Jacobo is on the line with us, Health Director of the Latino Task Force for COVID-19 in San Francisco. Thanks for joining us, John Jacobo.
It is an honor to be on. Good morning.
And you have a testing and vaccine site in San Francisco's Mission District, which you've called a success. Can you talk about why you feel like what's happened there is a model for reaching specific hard-to-reach populations?
Well, you know, I think this is one of the few victories, if you will, that I think community can claim in a very dark period of time, I think, for our country. For many that don't know, the San Francisco Mission District has been a very vibrant Latino community dating back to the 50s, 60s, and on, right? It has always been a newcomer community for the Irish, the Italian, and Mexican-American, Salvadorians, and Nicaraguenses. But I think as we have all now seen through this pandemic, that economic inequities have given us these disparities, these very painful disparities, and you can see them. It's kind of like the iteration of racism in action, right? These inequities that have been caused through different racial and class groups in the country and really in our city. And our neighborhood, the Mission District, has a wide swath of community leaders that have been fighting since the 60s and 70s, different ordeals we've had to go through with gentrification, disinvestment from the city. And what that has culminated to is this very unique leadership of multi-generational leaders, folks that have been fighting for decades, some newer. And we came together to form the Latino Task Force. Our Latino Task Force is rooted in community. We're all community organizers. We're not a 501c3. We're just folks that pandemic, gun violence, gentrification will be on the front lines fighting. And this group was able to partner with the University of California, San Francisco, to find very, very innovative ways to do things and achieve things. And one of those was discovering this idea, right? Not discovering, but really rolling out this idea of low barrier testing. And we're talking about disparities throughout the state. We're talking about the lack of connection to information. The city here, for the city, county of San Francisco, and for a large majority of the state, of course, a bunch of online portals, very amazing to use, very pretty websites. But when you have a disconnected population of the society, which also happens to be the ones that are living in congregating living situations, right, the ones that are the essential workers keeping this running, you have them, unfortunately, not be able to connect to these things. And so our model was really rooted in bringing the testing to the people, going door to door, registering folks with tablets, answering their questions about what it is a test is, what does it mean, what does a vaccine mean now that we've rolled out to this stage of it, and bringing it to the neighborhood where they are so they can show up same day and get tested. And our rapid response model allows us for them to get a response for their, whether they're COVID positive or COVID negative, within an hour. We're able to get them services that same night of food or cleaning supplies should they not have that, connect them to city programs like the Right to Recover policy that we help launch here. And now across the street, we have vaccines. While I'm very happy for my neighborhood and the Mission District in San Francisco, I fear for the rest of the state, because I know that this is not a reality in low-income neighborhoods, and it's something that the state leadership has left to desire.
Have they engaged you about how you have made your model such a success, and so that they can replicate it in some ways in other parts of California?
Not yet. I mean, we're definitely, working towards and always open to talking to the California Department of Public Health, to the governor's office. But this model, I just want to kind of highlight for listeners, on any given day, with our 500 tests that we do here at 24th and Mission, we are capturing anywhere between 16 to 45% of all of the city's positives. because of our support program, we are able to ensure that 97% of the folks that test positive are supported and can stay home without having to leave their house. If you think of that in terms of, you know, who the essential workers are, it ensures that folks aren't going into grocery stores, that folks aren't going back to their works that they have to work at, and thus spreading the virus. And so we're here and open, to talk and explore how this model can be sent to the different low-income neighborhoods throughout California, which are more greatly impacted than others.
Right, because it's the other part of all of this, the part of it where you're ensuring that people do not get sick. It's the whole reason that you want people vaccinated as well. In terms of your vaccinations per day, what are you averaging at this point?
Right now, we're doing about 120, but we're obviously angling to get as many as we can. We're working with the city to try to expand the amount of vaccination locations that we have throughout the city and county of San Francisco. Again, this idea of mass vac sites are great if you have access to online systems, if you have the ability to drive to a location or bus to a location, and if you feel enough comfort to be able to get to these areas. But if you don't, you're missing a large segment of the population, which is arguably the most important one to reach, given the pandemic and who it's impacting.
So you don't require digital appointments. You don't require digital appointments then. It's people who can walk up basically.
Right. That's right. Right now we're having people walk up, which is also simultaneously heartbreaking, to be clear, to have people that are in their 80s, 90s having to wait in line. Because we helped develop a system ahead of what the city and county of San Francisco had to be able to take them same day. Of course, the city is doing what it can, the state is doing what it can, but we have to do more.
John Jacobo, thank you. Really appreciate having you on.
Thank you.
John Jacobo, Health Director of Latino Task Force for COVID-19 in San Francisco. And let me go now to caller Donna in Santa Maria. Hi, Donna.
Hi, thanks for answering my call. I actually just wanted to, so I'm out here in Santa Barbara County. Santa Barbara County is one of the least priority counties in California, but we are heavily, here in Santa Maria, a lot of our economy is propped up by the farm, the agricultural labor, including farm workers, indigenous farm workers. This past year, I worked with one of the community-based organizations here in Santa Maria, getting information to indigenous farm workers, including Mixteco speakers. I think with the current discussion, I'm very much glad that a lot of people are recognizing the technology divide that exists here in Santa Barbara County. The only way you could have registered for testing was either calling a call line or registering online. And if you were a Spanish or Mixteco speaker, that was a basically impossible task, and they were not accepting walk-up availability at all in any of the appointment sites up until very recently. And I just wanted to reinforce that, there is a huge divide, but among farm workers here in Santa Barbara County, we're still not giving priority vaccination. Right now, currently in February, is a bit of the low time when farm workers do have time to set up appointments, go to clinics, get vaccinated, whatever they need, and medical care they need. They usually take the time in the winter to do that. My parents are farm workers. They grow strawberries all year round here in Santa Maria, and yet we're still not given priority, even though we're the highest affected population here in Santa Barbara County. Santa Maria specifically is the highest impacted community, and we're still not given priority about vaccination, specifically farm workers and indigenous farm workers.
Well, Donna, thank you for sharing that. And I definitely want to get our guests to react to it in just a moment. There is another caller that I want to bring in as well, and then I'll have them react to both comments. Let me go to Mimi in Riverside County. Hi, Mimi.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me. I am echoing the same sentiments the other caller has made here in Riverside, just for the listeners to catch up. The Latinx community, we are about 47% of the entire Riverside community, right? That's our population. and we are dying at 49%. Wow. And that's heartbreaking. And no one's doing anything. Yesterday, the City Council of Riverside specifically brought up this fact. The councilwoman said, you know what? The Latinx population here, we are being hit hard. What can we do? The City of Riverside only has one vaccination site. That is at Lot 33 at the Riverside Convention Center. The spokesperson for that site said they only have 500 vaccine appointments a day. And when they were pushed to make comment, their response said their hands were tied. They could not do anything to change any aspect of that vaccine site. Whereas Mr. John Jacobo just mentioned, if we have low-tech, no-tech interventions, if we have mobile units, even if we set aside 100 vaccines, that will make a huge difference in just the City of Riverside, let alone Riverside County. But no one wants to do anything. And once again, in this city council meeting, there was only one Latinx member on that board, and she was the only one that made a comment, and no one else said anything. So this is not just heartbreaking for listeners, it is heartbreaking for the members of the community, because we want it, right? The spokesperson said they cannot do anything about it. They need to see a need. They need to see community input. Where can we give input other than NPR, right?
Well, Mimi, thank you for sharing that. And I can hear that it's also heartbreaking for you. And Barbara Feder-Ostroff, we've been hearing over and over again from listeners, from our other guests, go to the people, go to where the people are. The state has now contracted with Blue Shield as this third-party provider. They're saying that Blue Shield's top priority is equity. Is any of this, what we're talking about, part of their plan to streamline and speed up vaccine distribution?
Yeah, I think Blue Shield is definitely going to be held accountable for getting vaccine to the most marginalized communities, but it's going to have to be a partnership effort with what are called trusted messengers, the community-based groups that have been working in their communities for a long time that are trusted, just like Dr. Talamantes' clinic. And Blue Shield is kind of the logistics manager for all of that, but the actual work on the ground has to be done at the community-based organization level, the clinic level, and the people who can really be trusted and are, you know, the ones that are working with these populations on the ground. And my heart really goes out to the caller because, you know, we hear a lot of language at the state level and from state and local leaders basically saying equity is our North Star. And it's a lot of platitudes sometimes when you think about the very real consequences of the slow pace and the inequities in the vaccine rollout. I mean, we did some calculations from new state data that is available, and we're seeing that while the Latino community makes up about 40% of California's population, they have been vaccinated at a rate of about 17% of all the people that have been vaccinated so far, acknowledging that the data is still a little messy at this point.
Well, let me go to caller Susan in Sebastopol. And before I do, let me just remind listeners, you are listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Hi, Susan. Join us.
Hi. I would like to know what the data says. Is a person who is age 60 to 64 less likely to die if they contract COVID than a farm worker in their 20s to 30s?
Susan, thanks. I mean, are you getting at this question of what the state is weighing in terms of the goals of reducing death, trying to get to the people who are more likely to die from this virus and reducing the burden on our healthcare system, as well as keeping our society functioning by doing it on an age basis? Is that what you're asking, Susan?
I am asking from the standpoint of having the fewest people die from COVID possible and how they administer the policies and how they administer the vaccines.
Yeah.
So I would like somebody to answer my question. Is a farm worker in their 20s to 30s more or less likely to die who is age 60 to 64. Sonia Diaz is asking the state to reprioritize.
I'd absolutely love to take that, because what's really important, it's not just about age, it's about access to a provider. Almost all of these deaths associated with COVID-19 are unnecessary. No one should be dying. And what we're seeing is that at the point that that farm worker or that essential worker actually makes it to a bed in a hospital and is intubated, it's too late. Because those hospitals don't have the same access to care, and especially the space to care for all of these workers who are facing COVID-19, because they are keeping America safe. To your question, we did a study at the UCLA Latino Policy and Politics Initiative, studying New York City and Los Angeles. We thought about this study when New York was the epicenter of the US's COVID-19 pandemic. That has since changed. And Los Angeles has remained the foci. What we saw is that Angelenos between the ages of 18 and 40, young people, had the highest rate of infection. And so this underscores that workers are getting infected. Why? Because they're not staying home. They're leaving their house to go work. We know that population demographics show that Latino households have almost one more person in their house than non-white Hispanics. They also have more workers, more adult workers, and more children. And so when we think about this age, it's not a, it is a false choice to say age over workers, age over young people. We should be focused on vaccinating the people who are dying and getting infected, the people who are medically underserved. We know that we don't have the vaccines that we need. We know from the Biden administration that vaccines will be coming, that allegedly come July, all Americans who want to get vaccinated can. But right now, we need to stop the catastrophic deaths occurring in our Latino communities and in our working households. And that factors in to one thing, which is getting them a vaccine, making sure they're vaccinated. And that is not going to happen on an app or with restrictions that have a disparate impact on their access.
Well, Julia writes, I've been distraught trying to make people aware of the problems encountered by Latino or Latino people during COVID. Nine people died in my extended family, ranging from ages 17 to 83. I fear for other families, including my students, whose families come from diverse income and labor sectors. It is distressing to continue to see, how inequality extends in all aspects of society for Blacks and Latinos. Barbara Feder-Ostrov, I just want to ask you, looking ahead, we are hearing that more vaccines are coming. Do you have any sense of whether that process is improving?
Yeah, I mean, vaccine supply is definitely improving. We have production ramping up for the two vaccines that are currently authorized by the FDA. And there's a new single dose vaccine from Johnson & Johnson that is expected to be authorized fairly soon. However, we are in a race against new, more infectious variants, such as the UK variant and a couple of that have cropped up in California.
Right.
And so basically the idea is to get as many people vaccinated as possible.
Yes, and the people who need it the most. I'm so sorry to interrupt you, Barbara Feder-Ostrov, Efrain Talamantes, and Sonia Diaz. Thanks to all of you for joining the conversation. This is Forum.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.
This is Barbara Leslie, president of the Oakland Port Commission. Oakland International Airport, OAK, is proud to bring you this podcast of KQED's Forum. When you're choosing your next adventure, the smart and convenient choice is to fly the East Bay Way from OAK to destinations across the USA and Mexico. And when you return home, tune in to KQED, always bringing us remarkable stories about who we are and where we live. Enjoy today's episode of Forum.
Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply, not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.